Hello and welcome to NutriViews. I'm Maggie Jacqua. I'm the content director of Whole Foods Magazine. And today I'm honored to be partnering with NutriSource for the NutriViews educational series. Our talk today is Women Are Your Consumers, Are You Reaching Them? And this is the second in a series covering topics that can help you best reach and serve your female audience. NutriSource is really invested in covering topics that impact the industry's ability to meet the demands of female consumers. And this covers everything from shortcomings in research to shortcomings in messaging and marketing approaches. And throughout the series, we're hearing from both industry experts and we'll also be hearing from consumers, those are the shoppers you want to reach. And we're doing that to really give you a full and thoughtful view that will help you better understand problem solutions and also like opportunities to help you grow your business. So our first installment of this series is available to view on demand. It's at wholefoodsmagazine.com. And that webinar focused on the science with top experts discussing the lack of female representation in research, and that involved in the studies and in academia. And the researchers that we talked to, the experts we talked to, really dove into problems and solutions. There's great content there that you can access on demand. And today we're going to dive into another topic. We're going to explore issues surrounding marketing, messaging, product positioning, and merchandising, and the goals to help you really reach your target audiences. So I have very special guests today. My guest is Michelle Arndt. She's the training coordinator of Health Literacy Initiative at the Department of Health Promotion and Education and Behavior at Arnold School of Public Health, and that's at the University of South Carolina. Hi, Michelle. And also we have Tracy Kantowski. She is the Senior Strategic Marketing Director at Industry Transparency Center. Thanks for joining us, Tracy. And we also have Ruth Rodriguez, and she's the marketing manager at NutriSource. So hi, Ruth, thank you all for being here. And just to get us kicked off, I wanna start by just getting a little bit more familiar with each of your backgrounds to give our viewers a sense of your expertise and also your interest in this topic area. So Michelle, I'll start with you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here with these wonderful women discussing this very important topic. My background is a little varied. I've got a master's in health promotion, education, and behavior with more of an emphasis on physical activity and nutrition, and chose to kind of take that road down more strength and conditioning, sport nutrition type of path, working with collegiate athletes, professional athletes, but also weekend warriors and everyday general population of folks to kind of help improve their fitness and their nutrition to help them reach their goals. I'm about wrapping up my degree for registered dietitian as well. So I'll have that on board with the sport nutrition side and excited to tackle these topics and help make everybody a little bit better.
Great, thank you. And Tracy, how about you?
Sure. Well, Michelle, I loved hearing your background because I didn't realize it until today, but we have some things in similar, in common because I actually have an exercise physiology degree as well, which may not be exactly what you have, and a certified group fitness instructor and personal trainer, but that isn't what I do in my everyday life. And it's probably not why Maggie invited me here, but it is a passion area. So where I focus is actually on marketing and communications across the nutraceutical and health ingredient industries. I started my career at a PR agency where our biggest client was actually Firmivite, Nature Made Vitamins, which probably most of our viewers have heard of. And so I fell in love with the nutraceutical industry and doing work for that organization and being able to help promote ingredients that help people live better lives and also helping them connect with organizations to get awareness, to build awareness up more. And to drive relationships that were authentic and real. And that's what I focus on now with our work that we do at Industry Transparency Center with our insights and also the associations that we manage, including the Global Prebiotic Association, the Coconut Coalition of the Americas, the Collagen Stewardship Alliance, and the Global Curcumin Association. So thank you, Maggie, for having me.
Excellent. Thank you for joining us. And Ruth, we're here because NutriSource spearheaded this. So if you could tell us a little bit about what you do at NutriSource and kind of the initiative behind this.
Sure. Yes. And echoing what everyone else has said, thank you for having us today. This is really exciting and lots of good stuff to cover. Like Michelle and Tracy, I also have a background in nutrition. Well, maybe not exercise physiology, but I was studying originally to be a dietitian. Congratulations, Michelle, for almost completing that. But then I also ended up doing something that is not necessarily related, maybe indirectly, but I entered the world of Nutrisource in the clinical trials area, doing clinical trial participant recruitment, and then now manage the marketing. So a little bit of a transition there. But Nutrisource is a great company to work for because we service so many different areas of the industry, which means that the marketing is very versatile. And it's sometimes all over the place, right? There's the consumer side of things with transparency behind brands and certifications. And then of course there's all the B2B marketing with all of our corporate services and capabilities. So I hope that explains a little more about my background and what I do at Nutrisource.
Excellent. And for my part, I work at Whole Foods Magazine. So we're a B2B magazine serving the natural products industry, but I also spent just shy of 20 years in consumer women's magazines. So I have a really good sense of how important it is to hit the messaging properly when you're trying to reach the female consumer and you know, how hard it can be to engage and grab attention and keep it. But the importance of doing so thoughtfully and carefully. So we're going to cover some of that today. And you know, the reason that this is really an important topic for industry members to pay attention to is because women drive 70 to 80% of consumer purchasing. And that's through a combination of their buying power and their influence. That's according to an article in Inc. So that's a huge opportunity there. And you know, as women, we want to support brands that support us, right? So, and that's evidence from a 2020 survey by Kearney. They found that 86% of respondents said women-focused strategies have an impact on female purchase decisions. But that impact can be positive or it can be negative. So if your woman-focused strategy backfires, you know, you will lose that consumer. And if you gain that consumer, 75% of respondents in that same survey said they'd pay a premium for products that support women. So big deal there, because we have quality products that we want to make sure, you know, they're investing in that quality. And then on the downside, an Adweek survey in 2020 of women aged 13 to 75 revealed that 30% of consumers believe brands only advocate for women in ads when they're trying to drive sales. So not authentic, you know, they see through when it's just false, you know, false advertising and not really true to meeting, you know, our needs. So, so that's what we want to shine a light on. How can you make sure that you're really authentically, genuinely serving your female consumers? So, Michelle, or Ruth, actually, if you could just talk a little bit about how this project got started in terms of what you and the team at Nutrisource are seeing as the problem area and what we can collectively raise our awareness on here.
Sure, I'd be happy to. And I think that you prefaced it beautifully in your introduction in that we came together, Nutrisource and Whole Foods Magazine, to put together Nutriviews to really highlight various topics within the world of women and nutrition, whether it's highlighting women in leadership or speaking to some of the more specific issues. And the first episode that we launched was all around the lack of clinical trial data specific to women. And that can definitely play a role when talking about product formulations that are supposed to cater to the female population. So I think that was kind of really how it was born, is just thinking, what's a way that we can really educate the community and then bring in different experts from the industry to address these concerns. So from there, it's been good to just bring in new issues as they arise, like the one today speaking about consumers and that world of product marketing. But it's interesting because when you share the two statistics, you see the one side where women really are looking for products that are specific to them, backed by good research that they can fall back on. But then there's that caveat of like product marketing and pinkifying everything and maybe just trying to use it as a way to increase more sales. So I guess the question is kind of like, how can we do that where we have solid products that are backed by good science and then still marketed appropriately, but not too far on the other side of the pendulum?
Yeah, so let's dive into that a little bit more. You talked about kind of pinkifying it. So Michelle, I know this pink it and shrink it is a real thing. It's been going on for a long time, starting to be some increased awareness of it. How much of a problem is this now? I mean, are brands really just taking advantage of women?
You know, that's a great question. And I think the pink it and shrink it has lessened a bit as far as what I'm seeing. I did leave out a part of my background. I was actually a sponsored athlete with a large company for a number of years and had conversations with some folks. And yes, we did have products that were change the color, change the name, and it was designed for women. And to me, that was disingenuous, you know, as we talk about being genuine and how you're marketing these things. And what I was noticing in looking through some of the products, just looking online for things marketed towards women, you know, one of the big ones that used to be Shrink It and Pink It was more of like the protein powder thing. What protein is good for women? And that kind of makes me giggle because you sit down to a steak dinner and I'm not going to have a different steak than my husband. I mean, right? Protein is protein. So that was kind of funny. But what they're doing now is adding ingredients into these protein powders that are for women, right? So I'm going to add iron into it. I'm going to add this into it. And I get where they're going, but it's also adding an iron to something that may have a lot of calcium and it isn't really going to help that iron absorption. And so you run into all of these things again with the, is it tested? Is this efficacious? Is this something, or is this just a buzzword that is going to trigger something in a woman's brain to say, ah, yes, that's for me. The other side of it is some of those products don't actually say that on the front, right? So then if this is just a protein powder and I Google something and it says it's for women, but it doesn't say anything different on the front. What if a man picks that up and they don't actually want more iron in something? Okay. Again, bioavailability still might be a little bit low, but it still could cause an issue depending on what their situation is. So I feel like we've kind of moved from just pink it and shrink it to now add the ingredient and now it's a buzzword. And so I feel like we're steering the ship. It's still not in a great direction, but it's a little bit more away from that. Is that what you all have been seeing, or have you been still seeing some of the pink it and shrink it?
Yeah. How about you, Tracy?
Yeah. I mean, we will still see in the market where people will unfortunately just change the label, but to your point, Michelle, it is less, but I think it's also on the improvement side of what's happening is 15, 20 years ago, it was really all men working at these companies. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing more and more women in roles and in leadership roles, still not enough, which I'm sure we'll get to at some point, but it's growing. And so they're having an influence on the products that are out there. And more importantly, consumers aren't willing to accept it, right? So women know that if all you've done is change the label, they're not going to buy that product. They're going to look for something that they can tell some thought has been put behind it, where the ingredients are what they personally need and that they are substantiated and that there's a story behind that product. They won't just take a pink label and run with it.
If I can add a comment to Tracy's point, that is exactly what we're seeing too on the consumer side of things. We did a presentation yesterday at a local high school, so it would have been like Gen Zers in the audience. And it was focused on how to differentiate between products and leveraging the knowledge of third-party certifications in your purchasing, making decision. And the students, without being prompted, brought up that exact thing and one of the girls who spoke actually said she will go out of her way to buy the one that's marketed for men because they're aware. And these are young students, like they're grade 12 age, right? So just about to enter university. And they're aware of these, you know, kind of marketing plays. So it was interesting the way that they brought that up.
Yeah, that's, I definitely want to talk about that more because even when we were leading up to this, Ruth, you were talking about how like millennials and Gen Z, they're especially sensitive to like just nonsense advertising. You know, they don't believe these hype messages. And brands really need to communicate messages that really leverage their positive attributes. So how do you do that? I mean, and did you get some good insights from these young women?
Yeah, so we did a poll with the class, actually, interestingly enough, just to capture these insights and understand kind of really what their perspectives are. And one of the questions on the poll was, what is your source for information with regards to supplements? So are you going to the internet, a friend or family, a healthcare practitioner? And the leading source at 68% of the class, and it was about 40 respondents that took part in the poll, said that they do look at trusted sources of information. So whether they're looking at the research or credible websites. So they definitely are fact-checking, quote unquote, their products and looking for more information there. Where I think the gap is with the education behind concepts like third-party certifications. This was another question in the poll where we asked, what are the factors that you consider when choosing the supplement you want to take? Is it price? Is it brand? Is it the product formulation or the product type or third-party certification? And there were zero respondents who selected third-party certification, likely because they weren't familiar with that term. But then later in the poll with the question of if there was a way for you to be aware of a safe product or a validated claims via third-party certification, would that be helpful to you? And 98% of the respondents selected yes. It was a yes or no or unsure question. So it's kind of interesting to see that and that they really are thinking and doing that extra little bit of work before purchasing dietary supplements.
If I, Ruth, it's so fascinating to me that you actually got the zero response in the third party certification.
Zero.
Because at ITC, we do work with Insights where we survey consumers every year. And one of the things that we ask them about are what are attributes that are important to you from a value-based system, right? What would encourage you to buy more? What would encourage you to trust a brand? What indicates transparency? And we look at it based on demographics. So we break it into 18 to 34, 35 to 54, 55 plus. Right. And I bring all that up because we actually asked about third-party certifications and it was higher as a value for the younger consumers in our survey than it was for the older ones. So the fact that like when you're like in-person relationship, it's just interesting. Now our survey was amongst people in the US, UK, Germany, Italy, and China. And the third party certification was just off the charts in China. That was those consumers at all age groups. It was extremely important to them, but it's really interesting to me. And I think there's work that we can do with that third party certification.
100%, and it might just be an age thing because they are still relatively young. They're probably like 16 years old, 17 years old. So they haven't really entered that kind of independent phase of life. So, and then the awareness behind it. So just, yeah, Canada needs to get up on shining the light on the importance of third-party certifications.
If I could add just one thing to that, I think that's fantastic that we asked all those things. But that third-party certification may be more important for that age group, especially if they are collegiate and or high school athletes that may be exposed to, you know, testing for certain things. And so it may be uber important for them. And I'm very glad that they're aware of that. That's something that should be discussed in those areas. And I think that's really an area of opportunity for education at the high school and collegiate level is about the third party testing and the needs for that. So it might not be as important. Not saying it's not important, but it might not be as important on the forefront of somebody's mind that's 55 plus. They might not, you know, we still want what's in our product to be in our product and we don't want other stuff, but they're not having drug tests at, you know, like some of the younger athletes. So it might not be their top tier, you know, concern based on some other things, safety and efficacy for sure. But again, just the importance of, you know, losing scholarships and all of those other things versus I'm 55 and that's not going to affect me as much.
Michelle, I also think that's super interesting. And, but you know what that led me to just ask you, and maybe you know, collegiate athletes, pro athletes are very focused on that third-party certification. But you know what I've never heard is for them to make sure that the nutrients in the product are appropriate for the gender.
Or even what they're taking it for, right? So they might think it's going to do something that it's not actually going to do, or they, you know, or whatever, they're less concerned about that than they are about popping a drug test, right? Because that's going to cost a lot of money for a lot of people. It's going to be very embarrassing, all of these other things that come with it. And they're more concerned about that than the other piece. And that's something that we can have conversations about. I am glad that they are concerned about that though, right? You know, from that standpoint, that would be, you know, very detrimental to all involved. I think our products should be tested regardless because we don't want all of those things in any of the products, whether I'm a college athlete or I am a 55-year-old woman just wanting to be healthier. So that's very important. But there still are a lot of gaps as far as understanding if those things are appropriate for, like you said, for, you know, male, female, but even for sport performance. Like, do I need that for a track and field versus an offensive lineman? You know, all of those differences. And that's where there still is that gap in the translation of the science into practice. And I know you had mentioned that they do fact check on different websites and things like that, but that might not mean that that product still is appropriate for that person. It might, you know, that product might be up and up and it does what it says and it's got that stuff, but that might not be what that athlete needs, right? So there are all these different layers that we need to dig through as far as being able to figure out, is the product safe? Is it tested? Is it efficacious? Is it right for me? And so there are all of those kind of steps that we need to go through. And I think together, working together, we can find a way to make every step along the way a little easier and a little clearer for those athletes to figure out.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, Ruth, maybe that's a topic for an upcoming, we could really dive more deeply into that.
I think so, yeah.
Especially, yeah, helping the female athletes kind of target and find what they need and make sure they're getting the quality.
I have a question for that. Maybe that either Michelle or Tracy could speak to, or yourself, Maggie, as well. And Tracy, maybe you saw this in your data, but was there any type of question around, like, how do you know if something's been third-party certified versus a claim that just the brand is making? Like, how do you know if the non-GMO claim or whatever the certification may be related to the sports nutrition side of things is coming from the brand or from a trusted body? Like, I know we know, but for the consumer, did you see any interesting data on that, or like, what is your perspective?
I guess I can start. So when we asked the question, we asked kind of like non-project or non-GMO project verified or USP verified, right? So we gave examples, but we didn't go as deep as I think what you're looking for to see, well, what steps did they take to make sure that if somebody had one of those a seal on their label, which we did ask about. So if there was a seal on the label, I think consumers in general trust that that seal is authentic, but we in the industry know that that isn't always 100% true, or it's a seal right. that doesn't actually have any teeth behind it. Yeah. And so it might be a seal that sounds really great in name, but means nothing. And we didn't go deep there, but that would be something super interesting to look at in the future.
Yeah, because that was one of the questions that came up is like, well, how do I know as a consumer if it's just the brand, you know, saying that it's whatever certified or if it's a third party body? And I guess the answer really is just being aware of what the third party certifying bodies are and recognizing it.
It's a lot harder as a consumer, I think, now.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. It puts so much pressure.
Yeah.
Consumer. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I guess that's where we come in to try to help with the education, right? So let's talk generational. We started to talk about kind of some of the generational success strategies for marketing. So Tracy, I wanted to ask you, you know, what you've seen in terms of best practices, worst practices, if you can point to any brands that are doing a great job, kind of as case studies, something that people can model.
Yeah, so this word has come up a couple times in this conversation, and I think it's really critical for everybody to keep in mind that you have to be authentic. Don't try to be something that you're not. Consumers will know it, especially female consumers. There's a term that, you know, has come up in terms of femwashing, or where people are really trying to make claims for women that have no meat behind them, or we've all heard of organizations that go out and say, you know, I am totally supportive of women and female issues and everything, yet their entire organization is made up with men. Now, that's not to say that men can't care about women. Many, many do. But if you have an organization that's 100% men and you're trying to market products to women, that's a miss. You need to have at least some female representation, or make darn sure that you're talking to female consumers to get their feedback before you're going out with your materials. So I think, you know, for women and across all generations, make sure that what you're sharing is authentic, that you have data to back it up, that you're also providing information. Consumers are so hungry for knowledge these days. They want to know, what's your story? what's the science behind this? How much do I exactly need? Should I expect to feel anything different? We know that in the nutraceutical category, with you don't always feel benefits, but you have to, some of it's on faith, right? So they need to believe in the company when they're doing that. And also acknowledge that you have to meet consumers where they are. So when you're thinking about that authentic message, sometimes you have to simplify it for people too, and then let them ask you for more and make sure that you've got more available to them. And if they ask you questions, make sure you can answer those questions. One of the brands that I think is really authentic and is truly for women is Winged, which Jess Mulligan runs. And she's just done, she saw this need, right? Where there's products that weren't meeting like her own personal needs. And she went out and was really, you know, scrappy and figured out how to make things work and sourced ingredients and put together this really great brand, and stays true to everybody. And what I love about her too, is that she is completely authentic. And she also is willing to show some vulnerability, like when things are going well, or if they're not going well, she shares all of those stories. And so I think she's a great role model for this industry on the finished product side. On the ingredient side, which is also important, right? For it's always bothered me that many companies put products out for women that have no research on women, right? So, and I get it. It's hard to do research on women. I mean, Ruth, you can probably speak to this really, really well. In that if you're researching women, you have to factor in menstrual cycles and all kinds of other things that happen. But there's some really wonderful researchers out there. Abby Smith Ryan is one of them, who we actually, Maggie, had at one of our Naturally Informed events last year, Active Nutrition, my apologies. We had our Naturally Informed event last year. And she was great because she did this whole study on women and female athletes and how nutrients impact them throughout their menstrual cycle, and is continuing to do really great research out there. So there's people out there that can do it. Stratum Nutrition did a study with their eggshell membrane collagen and looked at premenopausal women. And so there are organizations out there that are willing to like do the work. And so if you're a brand, look for suppliers that have been doing research on women if you're trying to market a product to women. If you're a retailer, ask your brands, what's the story? Have you actually done research on women for these products, or what's the data showing? And if you're a consumer, I think, you know, unfortunately you have to do a little homework, but dig, ask those companies what they're doing. So.
Yeah, excellent. Michelle, do you have anything to add to that from your perspective?
I think those are some fantastic points. Abby does some great work, and a lot of students that come out of her lab follow in her footsteps. So it's nice to have women doing the research for women. I will say it's a challenge, not necessarily from the finding a researcher to do the work, but finding somebody to fund it. So those companies, again, when you say, ask the company, where's their research? They may highlight research done on a single ingredient in a different population because they don't have the dollars to do the research. Unfortunately, it is expensive. It is one of those things where you can find a fantastic researcher who can do the work. And then when you go through budget and you go through line items and things like this, and the cost that the university is going to take, a lot of money doesn't go very far sometimes. And so that I think is prohibitive. And so I feel like, you know, call to action to funding companies, to other areas that can bring dollars to this. You need to step up and help us figure this stuff out. Especially a startup company, it's going to be hard for them to fund or to do a well-funded study. Especially when you're talking about, hey, does supplement X work? Well, okay, well, you've got to compare it to nothing, but then you also have to compare it to something else. And then like you, alluded to, there are a lot of other things to control with women. So do you do it in that same cohort? You know, is it wash reach out? Do you have to have three different groups? Or are they all, you know, matched? And so it does get a little, it gets a little hairy, you know, and doesn't mean it can't be done. It's just that we, when we're asking, hey, where's the research? Hey, where's this? Why didn't you do a study on that? It's not always as easy as people think it is. And it's not always as easy as just do a study on it. Somebody's got to write the check. And again, those checks are not small. And then again, sometimes the timeline, it's a challenge. So I feel like if we could get some people with some deep pockets to come to the table, it would be helpful.
Absolutely. NIH was at a conference recently that I was at where they did specifically say we're looking for projects to fund. So if any of you listening out there are looking, I can't promise to fund you, but please submit. Everybody should be submitting for funding for this stuff.
Submit, but that doesn't mean that they'll actually, you know, get to the next step. And that's a challenge. And so that's a whole different ballgame of discussions of application processes for grants, which we will not get into. But just for people to realize, you know, when they see things, just because somebody doesn't have a study done yet on it doesn't mean they don't want to, you know. And so that might be also a conversation when they talk to the brand and things like that. Well, what are your plans? What would you like to do with these things? Because just because it's not there doesn't mean they didn't want to do it.
And, you know, speaking of the money not being there, for the women, here's another piece of data that at most 4% of venture capital dollars go towards women-founded businesses, and the average loan for women-owned businesses is 31% less than for male-owned businesses. So, you know, these are real challenges. You know, we need the women, as Tracy started to allude to, and I want to talk about this more, you know, the women in the business, the women having their voices heard. And Ruth, I think that's one thing that I've been really impressed with working with Nutrisource a lot lately is that your CEO is a man, but he really seems to champion, he championed this project. So we're doing this thanks to him just wanting to have these conversations, you know, out into the industry. And it's not like this isn't directly your business. He just wants to give us a voice. So much appreciated. But maybe if you can just talk a bit about what companies should be doing to help ensure that, you know, the women have a seat at the table and that women are being heard in these business decisions.
Sure, definitely. And thank you for those nice comments on Will. I completely agree with everything that you said. And it's funny because whenever it was like International Women's Day earlier this year, we did a little social post and he was the one who's like, let's put Nutrisource powered by women or something. Cause I think we have between 70 to 80% of our staff are women. Happy to speak to that. I think from what I've noticed in my time here is that there's always been opportunity for a seat at the table. And as well, he always says, he's not picky on who he chooses as long as it's the right person for the job. So one of the ways that I think he's done a great job at this is whatever specific project we're working on or initiative in the industry, he has a steering committee around or working group, and it always is multidisciplinary within like different departments of the company, but then there's always inclusion of key female leaders within the company. And we do have some of our more senior staff are vice presidents are women. We have Tanya John, which I know she works very closely with ITC, and Tracy, you're probably very familiar with her, and then also Amy Mazingo. So I think just having that opportunity there and then genuinely listening and valuing the response, that's the biggest thing I've noticed here and have appreciated as a woman working in this industry.
Yeah, and Michelle, if you could kind of touch on like, why does it matter? So we started to talk about this, but why do women need to be better represented in the leadership roles in the industry kind of throughout the supply chain? So from the R&D all the way through to putting the final touches on the marketing.
Yeah, that's a fantastic question. And again, I feel like understanding the population you're targeting, right? And there's no better way to do that than to have somebody who's in that, right? Someone who sits in it every day can speak to those things. It doesn't mean that we don't continue to ask questions from our target audience and things like that, but I feel like it gives us a leg up on the perspectives that are already pervasive throughout that population. All the way down the line, like you said, from R&D to, you know, the marketing, to the standing face-to-face in the brick and mortar building, selling these things. All of those conversations tend to be more genuine when they come from, again, someone like me, right? So if I want to go somewhere, I want to see someone like me that I can ask a question to. I don't want to ask that question to someone that I don't feel understands me very well.
So I did want to move on to you, Tracy, though, for just, there's an initiative in the industry called Women in Nutraceuticals, and this is something that you've kind of helped spearhead. Tell us about what that is and what the goals are and how, you know, the hope is that we're going to drive some more change here.
Yeah, I am really, really excited about Women in Nutraceuticals. We just launched actually a couple weeks ago, and it's led by an incredible board, which for the industry, you should all know that one of our board members is a male. So this isn't because we need men and women working together, right? For product development, when we're talking about how we're marketing consumers, we need men at the table just as much as we need women across the board. But at Women in Nutraceuticals, the mission is to empower women in nutraceuticals to unlock their personal and professional potential. And we're trying to do this in a number of different ways. So we're trying to increase the number of women in leadership roles. But we also recognize that not every woman wants to be in the C-suite, right? So you have to meet people where they are, but they still need a seat at the table. They still need a voice and they still need to feel comfortable. So we're also looking to train women at all levels. We are looking to increase funding for female-owned businesses because, Maggie, as you said, there's not that many that are getting funding. And there needs to be more women that when you're going out for VC funding, that they have just as equal of a chance to get funding as a man does, because right now that isn't the case. We're trying to increase funding, Michelle, to your point that you brought up earlier, for research that's conducted either by women or for women, or in the best case scenario, for women by women, right? Where it's meeting their needs. And so it's really, you know, leadership and training development. It's funding for businesses and funding for science across the board. And we're really, really fortunate that we already have a number of fantastic corporate partners like Nutrisource, who just signed on recently as a gold sponsor. And it shows again how committed Will is to really helping women in the industry. And also media partners like Whole Foods Magazine, who are helping get spread the word, because if people don't know who we are, they can't join. In just a couple of weeks, we already have about 100 members, and we have, I think we're over 25 corporate sponsors. So it's really growing, and the passion for the industry is apparent that like people recognize there's a need, and it's men and women coming to the table, which is really, really great. So we encourage everybody listening to join WIN, or if you can't join WIN right now, at least sign up for our newsletter, connect with us. We want to make sure that you know what we're doing and get you involved so that we can all create a better industry.
Excellent. So good things happening. We're working on change. We're going to continue the Nutriviews series to have more conversations on just topics related to helping us reach and empower women in the natural products industry. Okay, excellent. Well, you know, as we've seen here, there's some positive things happening, things in the works, and we're going to continue the Nutriviews conversation to help bring more awareness and help empower women in the natural products industry. So before we wrap up, I just want to see if anybody has any final takeaways.
I think, Maggie, we had an awesome conversation today. Lots of good topics brought to light within this. And I think everyone has a clear idea of kind of the next steps. I know I personally am going to be focusing more on like the consumer education side and making sure that there's more awareness around that. And I look forward to connecting with Tracy and getting to know you better, Michelle, as well, and working together on some of these key initiatives.
Excellent. Well, Michelle, Tracy, Ruth, thank you all for joining us here on Nutriviews. It's been wonderful talking to you. We've learned a lot. And, you know, if anybody has comments or suggestions, you can reach out to us and we'll be covering more in the future. So thank you all for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you.